Days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man of Bethlehem in Judea went to sojourn in the country of Moab. He and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the name of the two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephratites from Bethlehem in Judah. And they went into the country of Moab and remained there, but Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. These took Moabite wives, and the name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other, Ruth. They lived there about 10 years, and both Mahlon and Chilion died, and so the woman was left without her two sons and her husband. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law to return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the fields of Moab that the Lord had visited his people and had given them food. So she set out from the place where she was with her two daughters-in-law, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. But Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go, return each of you to her mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find rest, each of you in the house of her husband." And then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept, and they said to her, "No, we will return with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may become your husbands? Turn back, my daughters. Go your way. For I am too old to have a husband, and if I should say I have hope, even if I should have a husband this night and should bear sons, would you therefore wait till they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is exceedingly bitter to me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me." Then they lifted up their voices and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. And she said, "See, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law." But Ruth said, "Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you, for where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. May the Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts me from you." And when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said, "No more." So the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem. And when they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the woman said, "Is this Naomi?" She said to them, "Do not call me Naomi. Call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me?" So Naomi returned, and Ruth, the Moabite, her daughter-in-law with her, who returned from the country of Moab. And they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. This is God's word. So all of us have questions for God and questions about God. And life with faith is about more than just knowing all the right answers. It's also about living authentically in the face of questions. Questions like, how could God let this happen? Where is he? What's he doing? Does he care? Life at times seems very random and senseless. And at those times, we may begin to doubt. Is all of this really true? Sometimes it doesn't feel true. Have you ever felt that way? Well, we open the Word every week because we believe that God is not silent in response to our questions. He has spoken. He has spoken through His Word, and so we go to the Word. But the way that God goes about answering our questions is not in the way that we might expect. The Bible is not a question and answer book. Nor is it like my high school math book that had the solutions to the odd numbers in the back. No, the way that God goes about answering our questions is by telling us a story. It's a true story, The story that starts at the very beginning and goes to the very end. And God tells us this story so that in light of his story, our stories would begin to make some sense. So that when we're in the midst of a chapter of our lives that we don't understand, we would be able to say, I know that this is not all that there is, because I know the larger story that God is telling. But if that's going to happen, then we have to immerse ourselves in the story, and in the stories of the Bible. Because in these pages, we see the grand drama of how the world was intended to be, how it got to be the way it is now, and what God is doing to put things right, to restore it, to reclaim it, to reclaim us, so that we are the people that he created us to be. So tonight I want to revisit this story that we've just read, this particular part of the story, the part of the story that actually first put this little town called Bethlehem on the map, the story of Ruth. This story is a story of a return, of a reversal, and renewal, of blessing that comes through bitterness, of unreserved kindness and unreserved loyalty. It's a story that teaches us that even in times of emptiness, when prayers seem to fall lifeless to the ground, when it seems like nothing is happening, that God's presence may break through in ordinary life. Our passage today shows us a picture of a woman who has experienced the bitterness of life, who in fact defines herself, names herself by the bitterness that she has experienced. But out of that bitterness comes this unlooked for, unexpected blessing. In fact, in this passage and in this book, there's this tension between bitterness and blessing and which one will have the final word. In fact, today's text is a powerful testament to the way that God moves to bring blessing out of bitterness through unexpected sources. And it invites us to discern the way that God may be moving behind the scenes of our stories, showing up in ways that we do not expect to renew us deeper than we could possibly dream. Chapter 1, or Act 1 of the dramatic narrative that is Ruth's story, tells a story of a departure, a return journey, and a homecoming. So these are the three scenes in Act 1. The first is found in verses 1 through 5, the second in verses 6 through 18, and the third in verses 19 through 22. A departure, a return journey, and a homecoming. It's a very well-crafted narrative, and I'd like us simply to walk through it together this evening. So let's look at Act 1, Scene 1, the departure. So as the curtain rises, we get these two background details that set the stage. First, the story takes place in the days when the judges ruled. Now, if you know anything about the era of the judges, you know that it was a time during Israel's history in which there was no king to protect the people and to establish justice throughout the land. It was a time when Israel was under constant threat, both externally from the surrounding nations and then internally from civil war. In fact, towards the end of the book of Judges, we get this refrain again and again. In those days, there was no king in the land, and everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And this is the setting for the story of Ruth. In the author's mind, it is not important that we know exactly when Ruth's story happened, just that it happened during a time of social upheaval and religious chaos when it was unclear if the nation of Israel would even survive. That's when this story happened, when the judges ruled. The second background piece is that we are told that there is a famine in the land. And this famine was so severe that apparently a man named from Bethlehem took his family to sojourn in the country of Moab, a foreign nation. This kind of thing still happens today, by the way, and perhaps this story should situate the way that we think of contemporary sojourners. What motivates a person to place themselves in the mercy of a foreign nation? Only if the pain of departure is preferable to the pain of staying home. Sojourn was not a pleasant experience in the ancient world any more than it is today. It's for this reason that Old Testament law repeatedly commands Israelites to welcome the displaced and to reserve a part of their tithe for sojourners from other lands who had been compelled to seek refuge in Israel. But now there's this reversal because there is a man, an Israelite, leaving Bethlehem, the house of bread. That's what Bethlehem means. A man from the house of bread experiences a famine that is so severe that he takes his family to sojourn in Moab, which means that things are not the way they're supposed to be in the land. In fact, we're told that this man and his family are Ephratites, which means that they would have been one of the first families of Bethlehem, blue bloods, a wealthy family, which makes the humiliation of having to take a sojourn all the more acute. So get the picture. In the chaotic time of the judges, there is a famine in the house of bread, and a man named Elimelech takes his wife and two sons to sojourn in the foreign land of Moab. Now, the name Elimelech means God is my king. And this underscores a key theme in the book. And commentators suggest that such a kingly name would have associated the family with the power that they once had. But this story is about a different kind of power, a power that's not seen most fully in times of triumph, but in times of tragedy, because it's not long before Elimelech dies, leaving behind his wife and sons. I mean, think about that. Every time that Naomi would say her dead husband's name, she would be forced to reckon with the question of what does it mean to say, God is my king, in the face of deprivation and desolation and death. So she's bereaved of her husband. The sons are bereaved of father. And yet they continue the life of immigrants in Moab. They take Moabite wives, Orpah and Ruth. And the sorrow of the death of Elimelech is now set against the marriage of the two sons, which restores the hope that the family line can continue through children. And yet we are told that they live there for 10 years, making us wonder if there will be children after all. Why are no children mentioned? Are these women infertile? Well, we never get to find out because in verse 5, both of the sons die. And now Naomi is left with no husband and no sons. An elderly woman without children to support her in her old age. And so as that scene ends, the question lingers, how will these women survive? But another question, and the question that the ancient readers would have undoubtedly asked is this: is this family cursed? Should we read the famine, the apparent barrenness, the death, as God's judgment? Or is there something else going on? This brings us to the second scene, the journey. So one day, Naomi decides it's time to move. She has heard in the fields of Moab that the famine in Bethlehem is over and that the Lord has visited his people and has given them bread. Now there is once again bread in the house of bread. And Naomi knows that there are provisions in the law for widows, for the poor to glean from the leftovers of the harvest, but it is also the time of the judges, a time when the law is routinely ignored, and Naomi does not know if anyone is observing the law. But there's at least as much a chance of survival in her homeland as in Moab, and so she sets out to make the one-week journey back to Bethlehem. And her daughters begin to travel with her. But as Naomi journeys with her daughters, she begins to convince them to return to Moab. She says, leave, return to your mother's house, and she blesses them. She says, may the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. And this is a powerful moment, sending off her daughters, blessing them. And there's a key word that's used here, translated kindly, this Hebrew word, chesed. Chesed. That's the word that's used to describe fidelity, a steadfast, loyal love. Other versions translate it mercy or loving kindness, because this is the word that is used to describe God's covenantal faithfulness to his people. Give thanks to the Lord, for his chesed endures forever. It's a love that is faithful, surprising, loyal, and kind. It's a word to convey the deepest loyalty and love. Naomi blesses her daughters-in-law. She's saying, I will no longer be present to show chesed to you, so may Yahweh show chesed to you even in this foreign land. And she dismisses them. She says, may you find rest, and may you be blessed. And both of them weep, and they affirm their desire to return with Naomi to her people. And she speaks again, and now she unloads her arsenal of reasons why they should not stay with her. First, there's no hope of finding further family with her. She has no more sons to give them. Second, to go with Naomi would be to throw away their own hopes of marrying, their own hopes of bearing children. But most significantly, Naomi does not want her daughters-in-law to bind themselves to her because she believes that she is cursed. Naomi says, it is exceedingly bitter to me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. She believes that God has aggressively attacked and wounded her, that he is against her, and to bind themselves to Naomi would be to share in that bitterness. It's like she says, I have hope of blessing for you, but for me, there's only bitterness. It's like she's saying, get as far away from me as you can, because I am cursed, and I am returning to the land of the one who has gone out against me. And this impassioned plea is enough to convince Orpah, at least, who makes the rational decision to kiss her mother-in-law and go home. But Ruth is irrational. She clings to Naomi, and this leads to a third speech. See, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. Naomi reminds her that her religious roots are here in Moab. And to go with Naomi would mean to become a stranger in a strange land, and Ruth has seen how that worked out for Naomi. But Ruth now responds to Naomi's protestations with her first words in the book, a speech that is striking for its unreserved and unexpected loyalty. Verses 16 and 17. Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you, for where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. May the Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts me from you. Ruth says, your people, my people, your God, my God. And that's striking, considering what Naomi has just said about her God in verse 13. It's as if Ruth is saying, if to have Yahweh as my God means sharing in your bitterness, then I choose that. I choose to be with you in bitterness rather than to remain in the blessing that you have pronounced on me here. And this phrase in verse 17 is a covenantal formula. May the Lord do so to me and more also. It was usually spoken at a time when a sacrifice was made and both parties would pass through saying, may the Lord do so to me and more also if I break this promise I make to you. And Naomi responds to Ruth's promise with silent assent. She's overruled by Ruth's determination. But her silence suggests a bit of dramatic tension as she continues the journey. Does Naomi see Ruth for the blessing that she is? Does she see Ruth as an asset or an albatross? A reminder of her suffering in Moab, another mouth to feed. Does she see Ruth as her greatest blessing? Do any of us see our greatest blessings? Scene 3, the homecoming. As this, the curtain rises over scene three, we are now in the gate of the city of Jerusalem. Two women come into the gate and they set the whole town buzzing. And I wonder what was more striking, the change in Naomi's countenance or the strange Moabite woman who was with her. The woman who once knew her barely recognized her. They say, "Can this be Naomi?" And now, speaking to her old friends and acquaintances, Naomi gives us a heartbreaking pronouncement of her current situation. She said to them, "Do not call me Naomi. Call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full. The Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me?" Notice the contrast here that she makes. First, "Do not call me Naomi," which means sweet or pleasant. "Call me instead Mara," which means bitter. She renames herself by her bitterness. "Because the Almighty," she says, "has dealt very bitterly with me." Here she reiterates her conviction that God is to blame for the bitterness that has befallen her. And second, she makes another contrast. She says, "I went away full. Full I was when I went away, but empty is how I have returned. Empty, Yahweh has brought me back." Which should have been a joyous homecoming, only serves to remind her of how much has been taken away. I don't know about you, but I'm glad that speeches like this are in the Bible. I'm glad that people like Naomi give voice to the bitterness that we feel when life falls apart, the emptiness of loss, the pain of moving on in the midst of a past that you cannot change and a future you cannot control. But even as Naomi names herself by the bitterness that has befallen her, our storyteller does not allow Naomi to have the final word. Does not allow bitterness to have the final word. Because at the closing of this chapter, the storyteller reminds us that Naomi's speech is not quite accurate. Naomi returned, and Ruth, the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, with her, who returned from the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of barley harvest. Despite what she says in her speech, Naomi has not returned empty. She's returned with a daughter, Ruth, who, despite all of Naomi's bitterness, has refused to be parted from her. Naomi is not alone. And the final picture that this passage puts in our mind is the beginning of the harvest, which reminds us of verse 6, that the Lord visits his people and gives them bread. See, what Naomi doesn't know when she makes her bitter speech is that God is bringing a harvest of blessing. And there are two lenses to this. There's a narrow lens of blessing for Naomi and a wider lens of blessing for all of Israel and the world. Let's take each of them in turn. In the narrow lens of the story, we see that Naomi has gained a daughter, and that her daughter, an outsider to Israel, has made an unexpected and unrestricted commitment of covenant fidelity to her. "Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, your God, my God." It's not for nothing that this is a passage that is read at so many weddings, even if in context it's not referring to marital love. But go ahead, read it at your wedding, because this is what loyal love looks like. In the time of the judges, when unfaithfulness, when infidelity abounded, when nothing was certain, Ruth, the foreigner, the stranger, the Moabitess, is God's picture of what hesed looks like. What loyal love looks like, the commitment to be with and for another when all hope of reward has dried up. the choice to be faithful to another in the face of everything that life can give and everything that death can take away. So read it at your wedding. But read it knowing that it's not only married couples who have the privilege of demonstrating this kind of commitment to each other. Naomi speaks the blessing of Hesed to Ruth, but Ruth is the blessing of Hesed to Naomi. There's this great scene in The Lord of the Rings, the book, not the movie. When Frodo is about to leave on his quest to Mordor, and like Naomi, he attempts to convince his friends to stay behind. And like Ruth, they respond with this fierce fidelity, as Mary puts it. You can trust us to stick to you through thick and thin, to the bitter end. And you can trust us to keep any secret of yours closer than you yourself keep it. But you cannot trust us to let you face trouble alone and go off without a word. We are your friends, Frodo. Anyway, there it is. We are horribly afraid, but we are coming with you or following you like hounds. Do you have someone in your life like that? Are you like that for someone else? Because there are times when every trace of God's presence seems to have vanished. And yet the presence of a faithful friend, the fidelity of a patient spouse, the unrewarded loyalty of those who have committed to be with you and for you, these are expressions of God's loyal love. There are times when you can't pray. And you don't just need someone to pray for you, but to pray for you, to pray in your place, to hold on for you when you can't hold on for yourself. It's in those acts of fidelity that the quality of God's love can be seen. That's the narrow lens of what Naomi has gained in Ruth. But there's a wider lens too. And the hope for those of us who find ourselves wishing that we had friends or family more like Ruth. You do have someone who is that committed to you. A great descendant of Ruth. As I mentioned, Ruth's story is the first time that Bethlehem becomes a notable place, but it's not the last time. Ruth's great-grandson, David, will come from Bethlehem. And some 28 generations later, after all that waiting, 28 generations later, Jesus will be born in this little town. God will visit his people in person, and the bread he will bring is his body for the life of the world. Because it is in Jesus Christ that we see God's Hesed most clearly. Jesus, the one who promises never to leave you alone, the one who promises rest to all who are weary and wandering, the one who promises to be with us and for us when everyone else seems against us. Because even in the face of desolation and death, Jesus rises. And that means that bitterness never gets the last word. He comes to make his blessings flow far as the curse is found. Far as the curse is found. Far as the curse is found. Will you pray with me? Almighty God, you find us people who live in the midst of bitterness and blessing. The seeds of bitterness sown in our hearts so frequently, and yet seeds of blessing also there. Like rain falling down on us every day. May we hear the hope of the gospel this evening, the gospel according to Ruth, that bitterness does not have the final word, but that you are bringing a harvest of righteousness
for us, your people. Help us to extend the love that we have been shown to one another. In the hard relationships, the ones that are difficult to sustain and to love, help us to show hesed, even as we bank on the hesed that we receive from you every single day, not because of who we are, but because of who you are and what you've done through Christ. Bless us this evening. We pray this in Jesus' strong name. Amen. You stand to sing a hymn of response.